Okay, so again, good morning to everybody. I hope you're warm enough, cool enough, just right on a cold day like today, a cold day in Yerushalayim. As I said, the source sheets will be here any second and we'll give them out, but just let me maybe introduce what I want to talk about today by just giving a slight overview of, just to sum up what we've discussed over the last eight sessions. This is the eighth of eight sessions. This is the last session in the semester, at least for me, there will apparently be more opportunities to be together in the summer. I'm just discussing with Matthew now when to plug in some dates. So we've been discussing the Yud-Gimel Ikrim of the Rambam, and we've covered over half of them, and I think we've done quite well, really. We had a couple of sessions introducing them, understanding what they are, and why the Rambam wrote them and what they were designed to achieve. And then we've had two or three sessions on the Ikrim themselves, more like four or five. We've covered the first five Ikrim in some depth, and then we've covered 11 and 12. All we've missed out in the middle are the two middle blocks, which are 6, 7, 8, 9, which are HaKadosh Baruch Hu's communication with the Jewish people and the world through prophecy, through Torah, and then 10 and 11, which are Hashkoch HaPratis and how that works, and Hashem's knowledge of what we're about to do, and etc., etc. The ones that we've missed out need to be covered. Maybe we'll cover them at a future stage, maybe we'll do something else at a future stage. But I wanted today to sum up, really, and to ask, do we follow the Rambam after all of this? Do we halacha lemaisa, if there's such an expression, halacha lemaisa, in a hashkafic issue like this, which we'll touch on as well, is the Rambam as strict as he sounds? Is the Rambam as elitist as he sounds? And even if he is, do we care? Maybe we just don't follow the Rambam, in which case we can put this whole conversation aside, make it one of academic interest, but we don't have to worry about losing our place in the world to come if we just fall just outside the Rambam's parameters, which seem to be very strictly drawn. That's what I want to address today, and I want to really do it in three parts. Number one, what is the Rambam's final word on people who fall short of his high standards? Number one. Number two, does everybody agree that the Rambam's principles are indeed Ikrim, or maybe they're not Ikrim, maybe they're just important things, but if you don't believe them, it's like any other thing we do wrong in life, and we can, you know, do tshuva and get past it. And three, do we even agree with the Rambam's principles? Maybe we don't agree that there's going to be a Mashiach. What about all these other people that said, not like the Rambam? What about those other minority opinions, or maybe even majority opinions? Can we just follow those if we want to? And I want to address those three issues one after the other. We'll start just maybe by restating the Rambam's strict position. The Rambam, you'll have the sheet in a minute, but this we saw already before on the first class. Let me read out to you what the Rambam summarizes at the end of his Yud Gimel Ikrim in the Perish HaMishnayos. He says like this: when all these foundations are perfectly understood and believed in by a person, he enters the community of Israel, becomes someone in the Jewish community, and one is obligated to love and pity him and act towards him in all the ways that the Creator has commanded that one should act towards his brother with love and fraternity. Even were he to commit every possible transgression, which is quite strong, every possible transgression, because of lust, because of being overpowered by the Yetzer Hara, he will be punished according to his rebelliousness, but he has a portion of the world to come. He is one of the sinners of Israel. So as long as you believe my 13 principles, if you do Averas, that's a problem, but you can get around that, you can do tshuva, you're one of the sinners of Israel, but you certainly, even if you don't do tshuva, you have a chelik in Olam Haba. But if a man doubts any of these foundations, he leaves the community of Israel. He denies the fundamentals. He's called a sectarian, a heretic, an apikoros, one who cuts amongst the plantings. One is required to hate him, to destroy him. About such a person it was said, do I not hate them, O Lord, who hate thee? And we said that at the beginning. I thought it was worth restating, because the Rambam again says, even if you doubt, even if you have a question on any of these things, you lose your entire chelik in Olam Haba, you have no part in the Jewish people, you're not, as far as we're concerned, part of the Jewish community at all. Okay. The question is, how strict really is the Rambam? What about people who really don't believe these things through no fault of their own? And we'll have to work out how that works and how the spectrum of who's to blame for what they think and how. Let's look at one particular example and which again we've raised before, and I want to raise an issue that Rav Elchanan Wasserman brings, which is quite famous. The Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, he says like this: Elohim she'elohim cholik li'olam haba. The following people have no place in the world to come. Ela nichrosim va'oyvdim v'nidonim al goydel risham. They are cut off and they are lost and they are judged for their terrible sin. V'chatasam li'olam uli'ol me'olamim. And they're forever and ever and ever and ever sin. These are the people who have no chelik in olam haba. And one of them is, he says, chamishahem nikra minim. Five kinds of people are called minim, heretics. Ha'omer she'yesham riboin echad. Someone who says there is a God. Aval shehu guf, but the God has a body, uval smona, or God has an image, has a form. Lost his place in the world to come. Fine. And the Rivet, we saw this before, the Rivet jumps in and there says, Lama karal zemin? No, no, no. Why did you call this person a heretic? This person's not a heretic. This person's mistaken. And the Rivet says, Kama gedolim v'toivim mimenoi. How many greater people even than the Rambam? Halchu b'zeh ha'machshava made this mistake. They went down this line of thought. That be Mashe Rav and Mikros because of what they saw in the Pesukim. But Yosen, even more, me Mashe Rav, but Yibri HaGadis, what they read in the Midrashim. Hamashabsha, he says, Hadeus, because the Midrashim are very confusing. I mentioned to you, you know, you only need to read some of the Midrashim. They're very anthropomorphic, that God has a body, and God has a mood swings, and in Anim Zmiras, God has black curly hair. Black God has black curly hair. That's why we give Anim Zmiras to a kid to read. Because if a grown-up read it and thought about what he was reading, they assume that the grown-ups think about what they're reading when they're davening, yeah? Which is optimistic. If somebody read it, they think, oh, God, I'm davening to a God with black, long black curly hair, based on the Pasuk in Shir HaShirim. So says the Rivet, people can make this kind of mistake. Don't write them off. People do that. They're wrong, but people do that. And the question is, why is the Rambam being so strict on this person who made this mistake? Presumably, they're not an evil person who thinks that God has black curly hair. They're just a silly person, a mistaken person. They've made some fundamental errors. And I'd like to read you, I hope the sheets arrive any second now, because now you really do need them. Yeah, I am being optimistic.
Maybe she's waiting in her office. Maybe she's waiting in her office. Pick it up.
That's not actually impossible. I thought that she was coming up. One second. Maybe we'll just pause for a second. Okay. Let's go on and see what we can achieve before the sheets come. So I'm afraid this will have to be Torah Shabbat Peh, like the good old fashioned way. And let's see how we get on. Okay, Rav Elchanan Wasserman comes in. Rav Elchanan Wasserman, of course, one of the Gedolei Hador in Lithuania in the last century, well, now the century before the last century, in the early 20th century, he asks an interesting question. And listen to what he says. Da'asa Rambam, the view of the Rambam, the Hamamin Bahakshamahu Min, that someone who believes that God has a body is a heretic. And the Rivet writes down that many and great people made this mistake, because they were mistaken. So he's trying to understand the Rambam. Why is the Rambam so harif? And he says, V'shamati b'shem kvoidem arena harav hagon Rav Chaim Halevi Mibrisk. He quotes his Rav, Rav Chaim Briska. Okay, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, one of the Rosh Shiva's day Belozhin, and he says the following. This is his understanding of the Rambam's strict position. Keep the kfira, because when it comes to heresy, loy shayach shogeg. You can't claim to be a shogeg. You can't claim that you did it by accident. As you know, a shogeg is somebody who does something because they're negligent to some degree. They should have known better, but they made a mistake.
Like,
someone who breaks Shabbat because they didn't realize that, turning on the lights was prohibited on Shabbat. And they turn on the lights, and someone says, what are you doing that for? They're, well, I never knew it was prohibited. Or someone who wakes up and thinks it's Wednesday morning, and they walk around breaking Shabbat, and it's really Shabbat. But shogeg. So with Shabbat, you can claim to be a shogeg. And a shogeg has a place in Olam Haba. A shogeg didn't do anything but Kavanah at all. So with Kfira, when it comes to heresy, you can't claim to be a shogeg. Why? The Hamikol Makam Einu Ma'amin, because at the end of the day, you don't believe. You can't be a Jew. You can't listen to what he says. You can't be a Jew without Emuna. And if you don't believe, says Rav Chaim Briska, for whatever reason you didn't believe, you just don't have. What's that? Even if you had no blame at all, and he's going to explain in a minute, and Rabbi Chanan in a minute is going to disagree with this quite strongly, but Rabbi Chaim is going to explain that either you could understand that getting into Gan Eden, whatever that means, takes just, you have to have the right combination to get in. Imunah, without Imunah, you just don't have what it takes to get into Gan Eden. You just don't have the fundamental entry criteria to even be part of Klal Yisrael in Gan Eden, or in this world either, for that matter. Or you can understand that your whole life you were doing mitzvahs, but you were doing mitzvahs to someone other than a God. You thought God had a body. You did. You kept Shabbos. You ate kosher, mahadrin, min mahadrin, and you everything you did was the most strict possible. What can I tell you? Okay. I can ask Matthew. I feel bad for calling him, though. He's, you know... Yeah, I don't know. Hang on. With no excuses. Okay? Okay, now we have 55 minutes without interruptions. Yes. Thank you very much indeed. Oh, we're going to see that right now. We're going to see that. It's all good questions, which we're going to see right now. So listen to what Rabbi Chanan says. So I'm on source number four. I'm in the middle of source number four, and Rabbi Chanan just said that when it comes to kfira, he's quoting his rabbi, Rabbi Chaim Brisker, when it comes to kfira, you can't claim to be a shogeg. It's just not a good claim. Either because you just don't have what it takes, because you have no money to get into Gan Eden, or you've been davening and praying and doing mitzvahs your whole life to a pagan god. You think God is a god with black curly hair? I'm really sorry. Everything you ever did in life was to the wrong god. Yeah? Too bad. I'm really sorry. And he uses it in this lashon. And he says, v'ha'omrim, at the middle of the third line, v'ha'omrim b'shmai, people who say it over in his lane, but they're haloshon in this language. And he now has a Yiddish phrase. There, vos is nebuch apikairus, is oich apikairus. But it's a famous phrase of Rav Chaim. If you're a nebuch and apikairus, nebuch, what can I do? It's not your fault. It's not, you were brought up this way. You were confused. You were brainwashed. You're nebuch and apikairus. Sorry, you're still an apikairus. The Ulich Eira says Rabbi Chanan, Dvarov Buchrochim, it seems that maybe you can bring a proof for Rav Chaim. Shehari Kol HaKoyfrim, surely all heretics. But Kol Oivde Avodah Zorah, hey Mutim, surely everyone who does Avodah Zorah has been misled to some degree, and yet they're still Oivde Avodah Zorah. Ve'enacha Muta Yosem Mehamakriv B'noi L'Moylech. How can you find a more confused person in the world than someone who sacrifices his children to Moylech? But who chayv misa? He's still chayv misa. In other words, if everybody can claim, well, it's not my fault. It's like, you know, modern psychology. It's not my fault. I was brought up this way. I was dropped on my head when I was 3 months old, and this is why I turned out this way. It was my upbringing. You can't blame me, etc.
Society
made me this way. My parents made me this way. You know, he says that's not good enough. You can't. You have to take responsibility. Now, Rabbi Chanan disagrees. Respectfully, he disagrees, but he strongly disagrees. Look at number five. Aval kasha. This is very problematic, says Rabbi Chanan. The hatinuka mutl barisa. What about a child, a tinuk shanishba, that was stolen in at birth? Gam kein ein lo imunah. Surely the tinuk shanishba also has no imunah. They also don't believe in God. When we call makom hu bichlal Yisrael, and we see Chazal say very clearly a tinuk shanishba is a shogeg. In fact, maybe he's even an oines. An oines is someone who has no responsibility because they were forced into doing what they did. So someone who was brought up as a non-Jewish person, they are not written off by Chazal as an intentional heretic or even an unintentional nebuch heretic. They call it a shogeg. But tinuk shenishba lebein ha'akum may be korban ashgagasa. He brings a proof from the Gemara, and the Rambam agrees with this, that when a tinuk shenishba discovers that he's really Jewish and comes back to keeping mitzvot, he has to bring one korban. He has to bring a korban because he was a shogeg. The ain din kamuma. We don't turn around and say, well, you're a heretic, so you know you didn't need to bring a korban. He made a mistake. This is a very famous expression. Einis rachmana patre. How can God blame people who didn't do anything purposefully if they were really einis? Gam b'chisar imuna. Surely even in lack of imuna. Just like this tinuk shenishba never kept Shabbos and is not held accountable for never keeping Shabbos. So he never believed in God. Maybe he believed in a Christian religious experience because he was brought up a Christian. You can blame him for that. He was put in a monastery when he was 1 year old to save his life in the Holocaust or whatever, and he grew up to be a bishop. You're going to call him the apikairos? So the Rebbe Chanan brings a proof from the Rambam, and this is really fascinating. He says, and I'll prove to you that even the Rambam didn't really hold such a strict position. Even the Rambam, even though Reb Chaim says that the Rambam feels because of the guy that holds God has a body is Nebuchadnezzar Pekoros, the Rambam's obviously, that's it, you're out, which sounds like what he said, if you even doubt my principles, you're out. He says, I'll bring you a proof that the Rambam didn't think that. Because look what the Rambam says about the Karaites. Now the Karaites are a very important group of people for us. Because the Karaites lived at the time of the Rambam. They were the majority of the people in his shul when he became the Rav in Postat. The Karaites were very strong. Now it feels funny to us because 1,000 years on, you know, you have to hunt very far to find a Karaite. Okay, there are a few there's some in Haifa, I think, there's some in Ramla, there's a few and in Cholon, there's a few here and a few there. But there used to be a major force in North Africa, Syria, places like that. Have a look at what he says about the Karaites. Now, first of all, he talks about what do we do with a real apikoros lahalocha? This is quite scary, and we'll see what Rav Moshe says about this afterwards. Misha ain't a moidi b'Torah Shabbatai. Paskins a Rambam in Halacha. Someone who doesn't agree with Torah Shabbatai, which is one of the Yud Gimel Ikrim. Harizeh b'chal apikorsim. He's included as an apikoros. Umisasoi b'chal adam. And anyone is permitted to kill such a person. Wait, you'll see. Umachashin is parnes. She's parasim, excuse me. She who koyfe b'Torah. Once it becomes publicly known, this person is a heretic in Torah Shabbatai. Moiridin, I say, we can push him down a pit. Moiridin means we could, not just that we don't have an obligation to rescue him if you see him drowning, but we can give him a nudge off the edge. The line malin, and we certainly don't have to rescue him. The harihuka shakol apikoros, like every other heretic. The ha'omrim ain Torah min ha'shamayim, because someone says Torah is not min ha'shamayim. The ha'moisrim, the ha'mumurim, like people who give over Klal Yisrael to the non-Jewish authorities or become Christians. Shakol elo ainum b'Klal Yisrael. They're just not Jews. They're just not within Klal Yisrael. The ain sarich loy le'edim, you don't need any testimony. Loy hasra, you don't need to warn them. But loy dayanim, you don't need a legal process. But anyone who kills one of these people, as a mitzvah, they did a mitzvah gedayla, the hasin mikshel, and they got rid of a big problem for the Jewish people. No? Okay. Fine. The madvarim amurim, but here's my big caveat, says the Rambam. What kind of people am I talking about when I talk about apikorsim in this way? The ish shekafa b'tarah shabal peh b'machshavto, someone who decided from his own understanding to deny Torah Shabbatah. Ubu divarim shen niralai, and the things that appear to him to be true. The halachacha da'asai akar, and he went after his own feeble understanding. The hashrirus lib on his own heart. The kaita b'Torah Shabbatah tchilen. He starts like a movement. He decides to be a kaita, to be a heretic in Torah Shabbatah. Ketzodok abaitus, like Tzodok, who the Sadducees started from. Ubaitus, who the Baitusim started from. V'chen kol atoyim acharav, and all those people who made a mistake after them. Aval b'nei hatayim, but what about the children of these people who made a mistake? U'b'nei b'neihem, and their grandchildren. Shehidichu oisam avoisam, their parents misled them. V'noldu b'nei hakaraim, they were born as Karaites. V'gadlu oisam aldasam, and they were raised according to Karaite understandings. Hari uke tinik shenishba, of course, says the Rambam, this person's a tinik shenishba b'neihem. V'gadlu v'einu zariz lachos b'darchei ha-mitzvahs. Of course he doesn't do mitzvahs. Shehari hukanus, because they're like someone who was forced. The afal pi sheshama, even though they may have heard achakach shehu Yehudi, that they really are Jewish. Ura Yehudim, and they saw religious Jews, vedatam, and their religious practices. It doesn't matter. The fact that they know that they're Jewish and they see religious people, they don't think that's got anything to do with them. We see this in our own day, totally. You know, you can say, there are secular Israelis that say, Ani shomer Shabbat. Ma ata omer? Ani shomer Shabbat. Ani shomer, ani hulik lekniot, ולבולינג, ולקולנוע. זה Shabbat. אני לא שומר Shabbat של החרדים, ודאי. אבל זה לא Shabbat. זה Shabbat שלהם. לא Shabbat שלי. I've heard people say this. Because they don't think it's... Yes, exactly. They don't feel that it's shaykh. They think that we're a bit weird. We are a little bit weird. Let's face it, but they think there's nothing to do with them. The fact that they know doesn't, says the Rambam, in any sense take away from the fact that they are honest. So shehari gadlu al ta'osam kach elu she'omrim one second afal pi, sorry, two lines back, afal pi she'mama achakach shehu yehudi v'ra yehudim v'dasam hari huka anos, he's still like somebody who is forced. Shehari gadlu al ta'osam, because he was raised that way. Kach elu she'omrim ha'oichsim b'darchei avoysam. Similarly, she'amarlu, those people that we've mentioned, who just keep the ways of their fathers, ha'karayim, in the Karites, she'ta'u, they made a mistake. Lefichach, therefore, what do we do with those people, says the Rambam? We don't push them in the pit. Roilach zirim b'tshuva. We start kiruv programs, he says. Ulamashchem b'divrei shalom. We have, you know, febrengens. B'divrei shalom. Achi yachshu leitzen ha'toyra, until they come back to Torah. Beautiful. The Rambam says, Rabbi Chanan, beautiful. The Rambam says, of course, chas v'chalili, you shouldn't think the people who are brought up that way and who were raised in that and they don't believe anything, I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about the real, you know, finstere apikorsim, as they used to say, the real starker, dark apikorsim. Therefore, who I'm talking about. Not chas v'chalili, a tinuk shemishba. Okay, says Rabbi Chanan. So you see, the Rambam really doesn't think that somebody who is making a real serious error because of the fact that they were misled, he doesn't include them in this strict exclusion from Klal Yisrael. And therefore, why does the Rambam come down so hard on the guy that thinks that God has a body? Because the Rambam does come down very hard on him, because he was educated and he should have known. Look at number 7. It says Rabbi Chanan, V'dat HaRambam, the view of the Rambam, Ki Hatos Be'inim Hakshama, that if you make a mistake in thinking God has a body, That mistake, Balmidas Atzman, that came from his own error, the Lomi Piyag Goddess. It's not really because he read it in the Midrashim. Tell me, come on. You're an educated person. You've read around Torah, and you still think that God has black curly hair? Really? How can that be? Ki ilu haisa das and slowly, if their mind would have just been a bit clearer, loy hayag goddess matasasam. They wouldn't have been fooled. They wouldn't have been misled by their goddess. Vahayamoitzim derech. They'd have found some way, liyashiv divra goddess, to make the goddess fit, shaloy ye neged hadas, so they wouldn't have been illogically rational and impossible to sustain. If you read Agadata like a 5-year-old, if you read Midrash like a 5-year-old in Cheder, then whose fault is that? Are you an adult person with an adult brain? You can't understand that there are things which are not to be taken literally. Parables, mashalim, understandings. That's not acceptable. Says the Rambam, the person who thinks God has a body is worse than a tinik shenishba. He's a fool. He's a fool. And there's no excuse in the Rambam's world for being a fool. A tinik shenishba there. Okay, very nice. So why then does Rav Chaim say, I'm sorry, devos is never ha'apikoros. It's only happy curious. If it's so clear from the Rambam that the Karaites, the children of the Karaites are not to be blamed, and the guy who thinks God has a body is to be blamed because it's his fault, it's his problem. So why is the Rambam so clear that the Rambam, why is the Reb Chaim so clear that the Rambam is strict? And I wanted to introduce you to 4 words that really change the whole picture. Because there are different girsos in the Rambam. This beautiful Rambam about starting Kiruv movements and Febrengens and Divrei Shalom, and of course these people should be brought to Tshuva and etc., etc. There are other non-censored, older versions, manuscripts of the Rambam that end with the following four words in number 8. V'lai yimaher adam lahoygan. You shouldn't be too quick to kill them. And I have 2 Rambams at home. I have 2 Rambams at home. And one of them, the classic text of the Rambam, I checked it this morning, finishes where number 6 finishes, which is you should bring people back to tshuva and they're not to blame, etc. And the Frankel Rambam, which has the more authentic girsah, it ends with the 4 words, and of course you shouldn't be too quick to kill them. Now that changes the whole thing, because it puts me straight back again that the children of the Karaites really are apikorosim. And you should try, at least you should reach out to them. You should make an effort. But at the end of the day, they're all apikorosim, and at the end of the day, they all go down. Yes? Sure. Correct, but he lived in days which were not that dissimilar from the Rambams, where there were people in the community, many large groups of people in the community, who were disagreeing with some basic fundamentals of Judaism. In the Rambam's day, they were the Karaites. In the Rav Chaim's day, there was the Reform movement. And it's interesting, the people who lived at times in Jewish history where there wasn't that tension, they don't seem to be that interested in the Rambam's Yud Gimel Ikrim, because it's not relevant. You can go from the 15th to the 19th century, and very few people really talk about it. But yes, he did live in a time when this was relevant. And he's saying, and the Rambam also lived in such a time, and this is what the Rambam means. And therefore, if you think about this, this is really fundamental. Yes. Well, I'm not sure even. The Rav Chaim can also be turning around and saying, I don't blame the people who are living in the Reform movement for thinking what they think. Of course, I understand why they think that way. They were brought up that way. But it doesn't matter, he says, according to the Rambam. Devos is never a happy chorus. It's always a happy chorus. Rabbi Chana lives in the same world as Rav Chaim, and he's saying, no, I just don't think the Rambam learns that way. The Rambam is not so strict on people who have no other option. Now, by the way, this is fundamental today, in today's world, which is focused on Kiruv to some degree, as to what approach are you taking when you're doing Kiruv. If you're taking the approach of Rabbi Chanan in the Rambam, yeah, which is that really, you know, everyone out there is non-apikoros, and we're just trying to help people, and we're trying to, you know, put out a hand to them and help them to learn a little bit, that's one thing. Or do you really hold that really everyone out there is an apikoros? And look, I'll do what I can, but at the end of the day, you know, everyone out there is a heretic. I suppose if you take the former approach, which is everyone out there isn't a heretic, they're all going to Olam Haba, and if I teach them, and then they turn around from a position of knowledge and say, well, now I understand, but I still don't believe anything. So, Shkoyach, what have you achieved? You've just taken a bunch of people who haven't got a problem in Olam Haba, and you've given them a problem in Olam Haba. Time to get a new career path, I expect. And get out of Kiruv and become an accountant or something. Yeah? But according to Rav Chaim's approach, there's nothing to be lost. There's nothing to be lost. And of course, it does dictate how you perceive the outside non-religious world. Very, very strongly. Now, Rav Moshe Feinstein is going to come in with a modern view on this. The question is, how do we paskin? Do we paskin like Rav Chaim's approach or Rav Chanan's approach? That we're going to deal with that right now. Yes. Yes, yes, you're quite right. It's Haskalah. There was an enormous Haskalah going on in the Eastern European. In Volozhin Yeshiva itself, in the Beis HaMedrash, you've got Rav Kook, and you've got Bialik, all sitting there together. Yeah? Okay, so for whatever reason, but you know, Bialik and Rav Kook came out quite different from the same yeshiva. And therefore, you're absolutely right. It wasn't so much the Reform movement that was affecting Rav Chaim, it was the mass secularization of Jewish culture in Eastern Europe, in Lithuania, up to the First World War. Absolutely right. So, I want to show you a couple of sources, and then we'll get into the second question. Is the halacha like the Rambam? If you open the Shulchan Aruch, it seems that we paskin like the more lenient understanding of the Rambam, which is Rav Elchanan's understanding. Why? There's an interesting question that comes up in the Rishonim. There was a woman who converted to Christianity in the Middle Ages, and she's now a Christian. Now, as far as we're concerned, okay, she's chosen to be a Christian. Everybody agrees that she's placed herself outside the Jewish people. That's clear. But what about her son? She had a son, and the Shaila came up. Am I allowed to lend to this little boy and charge him interest? He's now a grown man. Can I charge him interest or not? I can't charge interest to another Jew, but does he qualify for that Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, as it were, that special treatment that I can't lend him money on interest? So if you look here in number 9, the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, HaKaroim, the Karites, Ein Lahem Din Mumarim, they do not have a din of heretics. But also the Halvois and Beribis, you are not allowed to lend to these people and charge them interest. Bein Tarech Loimash, also the Halvois Mehem Beribis, you're not, certainly not allowed to borrow from them and pay them interest. You have to treat them like Jews for all purposes. And the Rambam and the Ramad comes in there in Yoridei and says, "V'tinuk shenishba, and a tinuk shenishba lebein ha'oivik kachavim." This is the source of the concept of tinuk shenishba. A child who is captured amongst non-Jews, but any yodei mitoris Yisrael klal, he just doesn't know the Jewish religion. Dinoy k'karayim, he has the same din as these karites. But also the halvos of the ribis, and you're not allowed to lend him money on ribis, on interest. V'chein mumeris la'avodis kachavim. Similarly, a woman who converts to Christianity, sheyesh lo ben, who has a son, it's exactly the case that we talked about. Min ha'oivid kochanim, she has a son from a non-Jewish husband, of course the son's Jewish. Yeah? Shehaben harihu kamoyha, he's a Jewish girl, he's a Jewish boy, v'nikra mumma, but he is a mumma, okay? Nevertheless, he's also a Christian, this little boy. Nevertheless, also la'al voice of ribis, you can't lend to him on ribis. Da'havikatinuk shenishba le'bein oivid kochanim. It seems very clear, he says, he brings down that somebody who is not who has been brought up, who has been brainwashed, whatever it is, is not considered to be an apikoros, and you cannot lend them money on interest. Very nice, there's a psak. One second. The shach in halacha, later on, when he's understanding the Shulchan Aruch, number 10, he says, I'm not going to read the whole thing, he says, well, I assume they got this from the Rambam. He says, but I don't understand. Because if you look at the Rambam, the last four words say, well, you shouldn't be too quick to kill them. It seems very clear that the Shach and the Shulchan Aruch were working on different girsals of the Rambam. Yeah? The Shach had the girsa with the last four words in, which says that the Karaites and the children of the Karaites really are apikorosim, but we just have to try and reach out to them. Whereas the Ramon and the Shulchan Aruch seem to be paskening, no, they're not apikorosim, they're not heretics. And the truth is that the vast, vast majority of people in the Jewish world today pasken like Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, like the more, if you like, lenient version of the Rambam, which is that the Rambam really doesn't hold people responsible, even in Imuna, in areas where they had really no choice but to think how they think. But there are some poskim who do paskin like the Shach and like the stricter version of the Rambam, which basically excludes everybody out there from Klal Yisrael, even if it's not their fault. But the vast majority do not. And therefore, if that's the case, then everything that we've been saying about the Rambam up until now and his strict positions and this, that, and the other, that will really only apply to people who should know better. People who, for whatever reason, it's excusable that they don't know better, then they're not included in this entire discussion. Certainly according to the Rabbi Chanan, according to the Shulchan Aruch and Ramot. You had a question?
I just wanted to know about the Shmura, who was the Zayim
of Okay. Which people again? From Ethiopia. Okay, for sure. Why would they not be in the same category? Even more so, they were detached and apart from the Jewish people, they didn't even know what the Jewish people were doing at all until they reconnected, and then there was a question about whether they had to reconvert, etc., etc. Absolutely, you know, that would be clearly the case. So, if you like, the conclusion of our first question: how strict really is the Rambam? Is depends who you ask. But according to the mainstream view in the Rambam, not as strict as we thought he was. And the Rambam really doesn't have such a high standard, and he really doesn't say Devos is never happy chorus, it's only happy chorus, although you have to know that there are people that say that he did. Now, the second question, which is, how accepted were the Ikrim as Ikrim? Did the Jewish people always take on this idea that these are the fundamental building blocks for belief in the Jewish people, and if you don't believe these things, you're outside the Jewish people? And I've brought you a whole bunch of different approaches. I'm not going to read all of this. A lot of the rest of the sheet is in English, and I really do recommend that you take some time to read it at some stage. Pretty much wherever you look in modern publications, you will find it said that the Jewish people accept the Yud Gimel Ikrim as Ikrim. For example, I brought you Rav Aryeh Kaplan at number 11, where he says that formulating these principles, Maimonides went through the entire length and breadth of Jewish literature determining the principles, were always taken for granted and are unique to Judaism. In clear, concise language, etc., etc., he says that they've been discussed for 800 years and are still accepted by all Jews as the one clear, unambiguous creed of Judaism. Well, that's the first question that we were talking about. That's a separate question. I'm now dealing one stage beyond that question, which is, leave aside whether you do or don't believe them and what the consequences of this. Do we even accept these as principles? Maybe you don't have to believe these Ikrim as Ikrim. Rav Kaplan says, clearly you do. I brought you a nice line from the Munkacher Rebbe. The Munkacher, who says in number 12, as follows, says Hagam ki oid varim begoy bazer gam bepnimiyot ha'inyan bekavonas divrei Rishonim. Even though, of course, there are deeper understandings of what the Rishonim mean when they say all these things, al imkol zer hadvarim hem kepshutam gam kein boror. Even if you take these things on a basic level, it's very clear. He says anachnu ma'aminim bnei ma'aminim beyud gimel ikrim kepshutam. We are believers, the children of believers, in the basic understanding of the Yud Gimel Ikrim, Emes La'amisan, V'chein Yehira Tzoyim B'mheira V'yameinu Amen. Okay? I think he really means it. Yeah? And he says, we're ma'aminim b'nei ma'aminim. Similarly, if you look here in Rav Zacharia Fendel's book on the 13 principles, he says that the 13 principles of the acceptance accepted by all segments of the Torah community, I mean the fourth line here, is the authentic formulation of the fundamental principles of Torah faith, universally recognizes definitive halacha, that firm belief in adherence to each of these principles is a sine qua non of the Torah faith, etc., etc. Again, it seems very clear. I brought you here in number 15. If you look these up in the art scroll, the 13 principles, you'll see the following little section at the bottom, which ends, if you look at the bottom of it, the 13 principles of faith are based on the formulation of the Rambam and have achieved virtual universal acceptance. Now, he doesn't allow virtual. There's a little crack there. But not just in the, just before you turn over, not just in the, if you like, the more traditional, maybe even the more Haredi world, but even in the modern Orthodox world, there was an article, there's a journal called Torah Umada Journal, which you can download free from the YU website, which is very much a journal from the centrist Orthodox world. And the opening volume of that journal in 1989 included an article by someone called Rabbi Yehuda Parnas, which talked about how far are we allowed to go in freedom of inquiry, which of course in the centrist Orthodox, modern Orthodox world is a big question, because it's much more academically inclined, much more inclined to a broad understanding of things. So he says that he ends his article, based on all of the above, Torah Umada can only be viable if it imposes strict limits, I mean number 14, on freedom of inquiry in areas that may undermine the Yud Gimel Ikrei Emunah. Torah Umada will have an opportunity to represent itself as an authentic and historical tradition in Jewish thought. In other words, he's laying down the guidelines very clearly. He's saying, yes, we're modern Orthodox, and yes, we have a broader understanding of the way to investigate Jewish ideas, but we are not going to impinge on the Yud Gimel Ikrim. The Yud Gimel Ikrim for us are sacrosanct, they're sacred ground. This article, and especially this line in this article, spurred off something of a discussion, of a reaction. And one of the people who reacted against it is someone that we're going to mention in a few minutes, who is Professor Mark Shapiro. Professor Mark Shapiro in Scranton, Pennsylvania, did not like that last line. And it spurred him to write a very important article in response to that, and then a book that we're going to talk about soon. But it seems that there's been uniform acceptance, according to many people, if you read the modern press. However, that's not 100% clear. Because there are other people who say, no, you know something, everyone agrees with what the Rambam said, but not everybody agrees that they were Ikrim. In other words, yes, a Jew must believe in all these 13 things, Chiyus HaMeisim, and Mashiach, and Hashkocha, and prayer, and all that, but if you don't believe in these things, then actually, we don't hold like the Rambam, that you lose your place in Olam Haba. It's just, you know, a mistake like every other mistake, and there are a number of people who held that position. Rav Goren, very interestingly, Rav Goren said, pretty much everything Rav Goren said was interesting and controversial, which makes it less controversial that he's controversial, if you like. Someone who's never controversial and then says something controversial, everybody wakes up. But someone who's always controversial is, oh, of course, you know, it's controversial. But he actually took the view that the Rambam himself changed his mind. And after he wrote the Yud Gimel Ikrim, and later wrote the Mishnah Torah, he says you don't find the Yud Gimel Ikrim repeated in those words in the Mishnah Torah. And if you just look on the third line of source number 16, he says, B'chol zois, nevertheless, kinira, chozer boy midasoi, the Rambam changed his mind, v'daso ha'ikarid ikronit, his original position, arishona, shehechsheves yidiyasam ki yisoidus emunah v'hadas, that he originally thought they were yisoidus, they were principles of religion, and now he says when he wrote the Mishnah Torah, he actually went back. He says they're important, you have to believe them, but he changed his mind on them being fundamental. Now, Rav Goren is in a minority, pretty much of one, as far as I'm aware, who feels that the Rambam changed his mind. First of all, the Rambam, later in life, even after the Mishnah Torah, when he wrote the Morin Nevuchim, he went back over the Yud Gimel Ikrim, we saw this before, and he annotated them and he added things to them. It seems very clear that the Rambam himself did, still, even to the end of his life, stick to and stand by the Yud Gimel Ikrim, otherwise why would he have been, you know, updating them? But Rav Goren feels that he didn't. Nevertheless, it's clear that other Torah scholars agreed with the Rambam in these principles, but didn't agree that they were Ikrim. Here, Rav Yaakov Weinberg's book, or book based on his lectures, says in number 17, it should be stressed that all Torah scholars agree on the validity and significance of the principles. We'll see that statement itself is not agreed on by everybody. But he says everyone agrees on these things. However, some of the Rambam's contemporaries questioned whether a lack of awareness or belief in several of the principles would result in actual estrangement from Judaism. And he's really referring to Rabbi Yosef Albo, who I brought to the bottom of the page, who really takes issue with the Rambam. And I'm not going to read the whole thing, but you'll see that he says there that if someone does question the Yud Gimel Ikrim, just let me pick out a few lines from here. Look at the top here of number 18. Every Israelite is obliged to believe that everything that is found in the Torah is absolutely true. And anyone who denies anything that is found in the Torah, knowing that it's the opinion of the Torah, is an unbeliever. Fine. We're required to believe in the whole Torah. But go down five or six lines to the line that begins with the word Torah. But a person who upholds the law of Moses and believes in its principles, but when he undertakes to investigate these matters with a reason and scrutinizes the text, is misled by his speculation, and interprets a given principle otherwise than it's taken to mean at first sight, or denies the principle because he thinks it doesn't represent a sound theory in which the Torah obliges us to believe, or erroneously denies that a given belief is a fundamental principle, which however he believes, as he believes the other dogmas of the Torah, skip down to where there's a little dash, a few lines over, a person of this sort is not an unbeliever. He's classed with the sages and pious men of Israel. Though he holds erroneous theories, his sin is due to error and requires atonement. And we find such opinions expressed by some of the ancient sages of Israel. So this is very important, because Rav Yosef Albo said, look, I don't disagree with what the Rambam says in his Yud Gimel Ikrim, but I'm with the Rivet, who said, why are you calling the man who holds God has a body a heretic? He's not a heretic, he's just made a mistake. Like, no one ever made a mistake. Everybody makes mistakes. He has to do tshuva, and he has to correct his mistake. But Chas v'Chalila is not excluded from Klal Yisrael. So there is a strong element in the Rishonim which holds that the Yud Gimel Ikrim are right, but they're not fundamental to your inclusion in Klal Yisrael, and they're not fundamental to your entry into Olam Haba. That's absolutely clear. Rav Yosef Albo being the main one. The Radvaz, if you go over the page in 19, I also brought the Radvaz. The Radvaz has an interesting tshuva. Someone who was preaching in his day, the Radvaz, Rav David Ibn Zimra, who lived in the 14th, 15th century in, I think he was in Spain or North Africa. The Radvaz says that there was someone preaching that the Jewish people thought that Moshe Rabbeinu was a god. That Moshe Rabbeinu was divine. And this guy was preaching this idea that there was a view that Moshe Rabbeinu was divine. And he said, this guy's just clearly mistaken. I don't know what he's talking about. But then look at how he says that at the end of the first line. The line Maksasi Tam Lepoitroi Min Ha'ainish. The only reason I can find to excuse this preacher, this rabbi who's saying this, to excuse him from liability, is that the nation who taya is because he's making a mistake. But you know, Vatekanasa Kilkalt. Okay? The Loi Adip Hai, surely this man is no different, Mimisha Taya Be'echad Mi'ikre Hadas, than anyone who makes a mistake on the Ikre Hadas, Machmas Iuna, because they investigated it. And Nifsad, which, and they made a mistake, Shalai Nikra Bishvil Zek Koifer. You're not called a Koifer for making a mistake. And he gives an example, the Hari Hillel, and this is not the famous Hillel in the Gemara, this is Rebbe Hillel who came later, Adam Godel, he was a great man. He was one of the Amorites. The Tabe Echad Meikre Hadas, he also made a mistake in one of the Ikrim. Sha'ama Ein Lahem Mashiach Yisrael. He said there's going to be no Mashiach. Shikvar Achlo B'Nechad Kiyah, we already lost it. There was an opinion in Chazal that there would never be a Mashiach. So he said, this is obviously incorrect. And Rabbi Hillel made a mistake. But he was not a Kofer, he was not a heretic. And similarly, anybody today who makes a mistake is not a heretic. Rabbi Black talks about this in number 20. Rav Kook, Paskin this way, very interesting chat of Rav Kook. Look in number 21. He says, Le'inyin dina dasha afal pisha isu gomer v'chayle da'rahu, even though it's completely prohibited to hold these incorrect beliefs. In other words, he agrees with the Rambam's beliefs. Afilu misha shemistapek. Nevertheless, someone who doubts umaharher and thinks twice al divrei emunah hashlema. Mikol mokam loy matzinu shedanu chazal din apikoros. He's not an apikoros. Ki yim al koifer. Okay? Dahainu hamachlit hahefach. What is a koifer? Someone who decides the opposite. Okay, so we call Machem Loimat Sinu Shadana Chazal Din Apikoris Kiyim Ala Koife. He says the only person who's an Apikoris is a real purposeful heretic. Dehainu Amachrit Be'ala Hepech, who makes a decision. And in the next line he says someone who's a Rosha Gemura, a Rosha Gomor, and a Meshacher B'mezid. He lies in public, etc. So Rav Kook, not surprisingly, does not judge the entire Jewish people as Apikorosim. Rav Kook says, if you made a mistake, like all these other people say you made a mistake, so you made a mistake. Now, a book came out a good few years ago. When was it brought out? I think I may have even written here. 1999. There are two important books that, if you're interested in this, that you could pick up and read. And I brought you at the beginning of the course of bibliography where I explained where all these things fit together. Professor Menachem Kellner from Haifa University, who is a very thought-through person, who is himself a Yorei Shamayim, he wrote a book, and he called it, the title is a bit provocative, because it's not. It sounds like it's something that it's not. The title of the book is, Must a Jew Believe Anything? Okay? Which makes you think that he's going to say, like, I don't believe in anything. But of course he doesn't say that at all. His main thesis in the book is that the Rambam was out of line with most of traditional Jewish thinking in thinking that a person became a heretic because they simply disagreed with one of these ikra. And he builds up a thesis in the book, basically, and I've summarized it here very quickly, that Chazal did not want to exclude people from Klal Yisrael. There were things which were right, and there were things which were wrong. And if people made a mistake, then they have to do tshuva, but they can't be excluded from Klal Yisrael. And I brought you a few extracts from his book so that you can see the kind of things that that he said. Look at number 22. Go down into the middle of the first column there. Persons who violated the theological consensus were probably considered up to a point as simply strange, and after some point as having placed themselves outside the community altogether. The attitude of the rabbis towards matters of theology, it would seem, was more laissez-faire than totally uninterested. In other words, the Rambams were interested in theology, the rabbis were interested in theology, but they weren't dogmatic about it. Mishnah Sanhedrin, therefore, ought not to be seen as an attempt to lay down a self-conscious system of dogma for Judaism, or set up a theological test for admission of the will to come. It does, however, represent part of what is the first recorded theological debate in Judaism between the Sadducees and the Pharisees, etc. So, Professor Kellner's thesis is that yes, people believe these things, people didn't believe these things, they are important, they are correct, but the Chazal never wanted to be as dogmatic as the Rambam himself became. And therefore, the Rambam, if you like, shouldn't be seen as representative of the span and the spectrum of Jewish history in his approach to these issues. Now, there was a review of this book. The book didn't make much of a stir, actually. Probably because it was written by an academic, even though he's a very good academic, and people don't tend to read academic books, and therefore not many people really read this. Except for Rabbi Berger. Okay? Rabbi David Berger from YU, he read this book, and he's actually very friendly with Menachem Kellner, and the two respect each other greatly, but he very much disagreed with what Professor Kellner had to say. And he has a review in Tradition magazine, which I brought you some bits of, which I do want to pick a little bit out from this, and show you what he says, because he has some really fascinating things to say about what Professor Kellner says. Look at number 23. Let us begin at the beginning. I recommend you read the whole article. You can get hold of it online, probably. It is perfectly evident that Chazal did not present us with a Maimonidean-style creed. He says, I agree with you, Professor Kellner. Chazal did not put it like the Rambam put it. Clearly, the Rambam was taking it one stage much further. At the same time, it is also evident that they did not regard the denial of specific theological propositions as grounds for exclusion for the will to come. He says, also, I agree with you in this, that they didn't necessarily exclude people from the Olam Haba. The Rambam again went further than Chazal had gone in excluding they did regard the denial of specific theological propositions as grounds for exclusion. He says, I disagree with you, Professor Kellner, that you can't tell me that Chazal were not at all dogmatic. They did regard certain things as grounds for exclusion. And if you look over on the next paragraph here, it says in the middle of the paragraph there, it means that the rabbis did believe the membership in good standing in the community of Israel rested on certain articles of faith. Yes, you have to believe certain things according to Chazal, he says. Since they were indeed not interested in systematic theology, they did not articulate these principles until they were challenged. But once challenged, they fleshed out a position that they'd always taken for granted, which is the Mishnah, which is Kol Yisrael Yeshlehem Chelek L'Olam Haba, apart from these people who did. So Rabbi Berger's response to Professor Kellner is that, no, you're right, Chazal weren't as dogmatic in the sense that they set out a strict creed like the Rambam does, but they definitely said they were lines. There were ins and there were outs. And the trouble he has with Professor Kellner is Professor Kellner seems to be refusing to draw a line. And you see this very clearly in the top of 24. No one, not even Moses, this is Kellner again, has properly observed all 613 commandments. Well, that's true. All Jews, therefore, are on the same continuum, from those who obey more to those who obey fewer. There is no absolute in or out, saved or damned, orthodox or heretical. Rather, the question becomes where on the continuum does one stand and in which direction is one going? Which is a beautiful inclusivist statement. And he basically wants to say we shouldn't have any red lines as to who is in the Jewish people and who is out of the Jewish people, irrespective of what they believe. They don't believe in God. They don't believe in Torah, Min HaShamayim. Okay. Look, you know, we all have issues. Some of us speak Lashon Hara. Some of us do this. You don't believe in God. Okay, we're all on a continuum. Which direction are you going in? And this is going to basically open the doors to a very accepting approach to reform, conservative, etc. Now, I don't think Professor Kellner's agenda is to move the Jewish world to an open and inclusive. I'm sure he'd like that. From I've heard him and I've spoken to him, but I don't think he's not trying to do that in this book. He's an academic. He's trying to work out where the Rambam stands and whether the Rambam is consistent with Jewish history. But Professor Berger doesn't like it. Yes, you had a question. Non-observant what? Yeah, well, one of the commandments is to believe in God. And one. Some of them are. Some of them are mitzvahs. Okay, but he's going to say that you can't separate any commandment above any other commandment and say that this commandment, if you do this wrong, this makes you just a sinner. But if you do this wrong, this makes you an apikoros. He says you can't do that. And whether you're eating food that is not kosher or whether you've fundamentally denied the existence of God, he says, well, they're just mitzvahs and people, some people keep them, some people don't. And therefore you can't draw a line. Yes. Well, absolutely, and we saw that Rav Kook, when he was talking about people that were not Rasha'im, the people who were just brought up like that, he clearly paskened that these people are not heretics. I think Kellner wants to go a bit further and said nobody's a heretic, really. Nobody's a heretic unless they're just on a continuum. Everyone can do tshuva. Everyone agrees that everyone can do tshuva. Why can't a non-Jew do tshuva? Non-Jews have... Okay, do tshuva, is that his framework? Right. 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 Absolutely. Everyone agrees with that. Everyone agrees that there's no time at which tshuva is impossible. Well, let me ask you a question. If somebody is a roidef in society, he is a murderer, and he's trying to pursue other people to kill them and to cause deep societal damage. The guy could always do tshuva. If I catch him and grill him, and he'll say, you know something, you're right. But right here and right now, the guy's trying to murder people, and if I need to shoot him to stop him, then I'll shoot him. And he made that choice by having not done tshuva so far. The Rambam will take the same view with a real apikoros. That he's undermining society and he hasn't done tshuva yet, and therefore, you know, I have to. Yeah, he's. Now, have a look at what Rabbi Berger says. I think he has some beautiful and very personal comments to say in number 25. Despite all this, there are important aspects of Kellner's arguments with which I feel deep sympathy. I would very much like to believe that the assertion that so-and-so has no portion in the world to come is not meant to deny God any leeway to consider other merits in making a final determination. I believe that we should deal with non-Orthodox movements, including their leadership, with respect and civility. And I agree that the limits of historical Jewish consensus are sometimes no less important than heresy as a criterion of acceptability. Now, unlike Cal, the next paragraph, however, I use, even insist on, terms like legitimate and authentic. Kellner won't use the word legitimate and authentic because it puts people in and other people out. We have an obligation to maintain the boundaries of the faith bequeathed by our ancestors. And we cannot do this by describing even fundamental deviations as points on a continuum. Let me illustrate this point in a very personal way. In my mid-teens, he writes, I experienced periods of perplexity and inner struggle while reading works of biblical criticism. In my while I generally resisted arguments for the documentary hypothesis with a comfortable margin of safety, there were moments of deep turmoil. I have a vivid recollection of standing at an outdoor Kabbalat Shabbat in a camp, overwhelmed with doubts, hoping God would give me the strength to remain an Orthodox Jew. It's a very honest appraisal. What saved me was a combination of two factors. Works that provided reasoned arguments in favor of a traditional belief and the knowledge that to embrace the position the Torah consisted of discrete, often contradictory documents was to embrace not merely an error, but apikorsis. If I had been told by a credible authority that there is nothing a Jew really must believe, and that the only danger was that I would move to a different point on a continuum, I am afraid to face the question of what might have happened. Which is a very interesting argument, which is that if there really are no red lines, then everyone's going to basically justify their own position wherever they are on this continuum. And he said he feels that he himself would have fallen foul of that temptation. And the last paragraph he says, which is the opposite argument, which is finally, he disagrees with Kellner because an unanticipated consequence of the refusal to draw red lines may well be the fostering of intolerance within Orthodoxy itself. Since every Orthodoxy, indeed every coherent movement, must have boundaries, setting them in a reasonable place encourages respect for differences within those boundaries. Refusing to set them at all may well lead to the blurring of the central and the peripheral, the Ikka and the Teufel, and lead us to a position that virtually all deviations delegitimate. It hardly needs to be said that this danger is very much with us, which is a very interesting other argument, which is, if you don't like the Rambam's Yud-Gimel Ikrim, then you open up people to say everything is an Ikka. And you know something? You're not just an apikoros because you don't believe in God, you're an apikoros because you're a religious Zionist. You're an apikoros because you go to YU. You're an apikoros because of this. You're an apikoros because you're a chosid. You're an apikoros because you're a misnagid. And everybody can start inventing their own boundaries of what is apikorsis. Says Rabbi Berger, at least if we have the Rambam, then these things are, but everything else, you can't call me an apikoros for. Because where does it say in the Rambam that I'm apikoros? Which is actually, I think, a very strong point. Because within the Jewish people, there's a lot of disagreement about stuff. And if everyone can point the finger and call everyone else an apikoros, which is what sometimes unfortunately happens, then the Rambam is in many ways saved us. He saved us by limiting the sort of flashpoint issues to these 13 and allowed us to debate sensibly and civilly everything in between. So I think Rabbi Berger's article has a lot to recommend it, and I really recommend that you look further. Rav Moshe Feinstein's tshuva on the bottom of the page, I'm not going to read in detail, but there he talks about the conservative, is it possible to have a minion in a conservative shul? And he also clearly subscribes to the idea of the Rambam's definition of their apikorsim, and these people are apikorsim. He says, I agree that these people are not apikorsim to the extent that the Rambam's halacha of you can push people into a ditch would apply. Why? Because everybody's a tinuk shenishba, and he accepts that. But he says the tinuk shenishba doesn't stop you from being apikoros. And there's an in and there's an out. It's a very interesting where he draws the line here is not 100% clear to me which way is he going. That people are apikorsim, aren't apikorsim, but he clearly wants to draw lines. There's no question that he does not accept Menachem Kellner's continuum argument. There is a point at which you drop out, and that point is an important point to understand, and there's more to be said about Rav Moshe's position that I haven't got time to say. The last 6 or 7 minutes, I just want to bring your attention to another book. This book goes one stage further than Menachem Kellner's book. This book was brought out a few years after, in 2004, and this did cause a really big stir. I actually remember when this book, I was in London, actually I was here, but I was going there and back to London, there are lots of people in London were asking me, what is this book, who is this guy, what did he do? I actually went to Oxford with this guy, with Mark Shapiro, a very interesting fellow. He was a Rhodes Scholar over from Harvard or somewhere like that when I was there, and I remember davening with him in shul. He's gone on to write many interesting books, but many of them really are controversial. And unlike Menachem Kellner, who I think is an academic sitting trying to work out, you know, what the Rambam's all about, he's a Maimonidean academic, Mark Shapiro is a man with a mission. OK? okay? And not everybody likes his mission. And that's why I think this book came out and was much more controversial. He, in source number 27, he says, I want to go further than Kellner. Kellner thinks everybody agrees that at least these 13 points were agreed on. It's just the question is, are they Ikrim or they're not Ikrim? I want to challenge that, he says. I want to show you a whole bunch of people who never believed these things at all. People from the Rishonim who believed that God did have a body. People who did not believe in Mashiach. People who did not believe the Torah was Min HaShemayim 100%. Really controversial stuff. Okay? And he dedicates the entire book to bringing all of these individual opinions and showing you that there were large numbers, it seems, of people who just didn't agree with the Rambam at all. Never mind whether they're Ikrim or not. Okay? If you look at in source number 27, he says towards the bottom, for the scholars on whom Kellner concentrates, Maimonides' 13 tenets are correct, even if many of them do not qualify as principles, that is, as theological positions on which Judaism stands or falls. My concern, in contrast, is with those scholars who thought that Maimonides' principles were wrong, pure and simple. Okay? And if you look at his goals, look down to 29, he's put here, while the issues that this is at the end of his book, while the issues I have discussed are not part of the traditional curriculum, I believe them to be central to a proper understanding of Judaism, together with the turn to the right in orthodoxy, which has led to an increasing stringency in many areas of halacha, and ever-increasing dogmatism in matters of belief is also apparent. Many views that were once generally considered acceptable are no longer regarded in this way. Now, he's very clear. He's not happy that Judaism's too religious, too dogmatic, too machmer, yeah, too right-wing, and he's writing this book because he feels that this needs to be addressed. I think you can probably understand why this book caused much more of a stir than Professor Kellner's book. And what he does, basically, is he goes through all of the different Ikrim, and he brings different opinions. I just brought you on the last page, a couple of things that in response and rebuttal of Professor Shapiro's book, because Rabbi Schneerlein, who is a very important thinker and a very important academic and educator in America, he says, look, and this is misleading, this book. You read this book and you think, wow, nobody agreed with the Rambam. All through Jewish life, people have been saying that God did have a body and the Torah was not Min HaShemayim, etc. He says that's very, very misleading. If you bring a bunch of individual opinions from here, from there, which are very hard to actually contextualize. You know, I can find you opinions from lesser-known Rishonim that say all sorts of weird and wonderful things. Who says that that was ever a consensus? Who says that these people in their own time were not considered to be, you know, a little bit strange or fringe, etc.? And he says like this, in terms of the entire book, he said that the main problem was that Dr. Shapiro's documents, how many Rishonim disagreed with one of the 13 principles or another? But doesn't make the point that those who disagree with one generally agree with the others. Although one can find a Rishon who disagrees with any specific principle, we have an overwhelming majority of the Rishonim who agree with the 13 principles as they are. We find no Rishon at all who claims that there are no principles or that the Rambam's 13 are completely untrue. And some even claim that the error of the Rambam is that he omitted additional principles. Therefore, it is not only modern orthodoxy that considers the 13 normative. It is the consensus of the Rishonim. I think that's a very important point, because you can easily be misled into thinking that the whole world thinks the Rambam is wrong, and that's not true. And the last thing I've just brought you, which I'll just pick a couple of ideas out of, is a fascinating review by Rav Yitzchak Blau of the book. And Rav Yitzchak Blau goes through the book very intelligently, and he pulls it apart in different ways. When? Now? Oh yeah, I didn't know that. The next session is... Ah, very good. Ah, you see how everything connects nicely. Yeah. I think so. Okay, so listen, I wasn't aware of that. It's nice. If it's true, it's nice that it fits in. So have a look. So let's allow Rav Blau to have the final word. I think that's only appropriate. So have a look here at 32. On the book's last page, Shapiro writes of the book's significance in the context of reigning trends in orthodoxy, and he quotes Shapiro. Shapiro apparently sees this volume as an important resource against dogmatism. And indeed it is, he says. You're right. If Rav Yosef Soloveitchik can be accused of heresy for writing the secular Zionist did this, and he says you're right, too many people have been accused of heresy. Rav Kook was called an apikoros. Rav Soloveitchik was called an apikoros. He says, absolutely, you're right, that's not right. That has to be stopped. However, second paragraph, Shapiro makes no reference to a danger found on the from the opposing point of the Orthodox spectrum. And he lists a whole bunch of other people in the Orthodox world, which are very fringe and seem to say all sorts of things. You see who he mentions there, very interesting people. He mentions Tamar Ross, okay, he mentions Menachem Kellner, all people who are part of the Orthodox world, but who are, if you like, pushing the boundaries in different ways in different directions. Then he says... if Judaism, the third paragraph, if Judaism demands halachic practice without an ideology of belief, then such mitzvah performance becomes reduced to mindless behaviorism. And he says, imagine a Save the Whales organization consistently maintaining the same policies, even as its ideology shifts from a concern for animals to a belief in whales as deities. Despite the group's unchanging practice, they could hardly be considered to be the same group as before. Likewise, a Judaism that maintains halachic observance but drops traditional conceptions of God would actually be a new entity. When kashrus changes from the command of an omniscient, benevolent God to a folk practice of the Jewish people a la Mordechai Kaplan, the shift in ideologies justifying observance is too dramatic to talk about the continuity of Yahadut. He makes a lot of very, very good points, and he suggests at the end there may be opinions in the Rishonim that really are unacceptable today. They really are outside the Jewish spectrum, and it's not right that Mark Shapiro paints them all as identical and equally acceptable views. And he even brings suggestion that some of the views of the Rambam himself would today to be considered to be unacceptable, and therefore the Jewish consensus has excluded them. There's much more to be said on this, but I don't want to take away from Rabbi Blau's time, even if he might forgive me if I'm quoting his father. It's him. So who's... I definitely don't want to say any more, because I might say the wrong thing. Okay, fine, good. Let me just finish off by thanking you very much. This has been a tricky course. It's quite an in-depth study. There's lots to think about. I hope that you found it illuminating. Be'ezrat Hashem, we'll have other opportunities to do other things together. I just want to thank Lambda College for asking me to come, and really wish you all a successful winter, a gesunter winter, and please God, we'll meet up in the spring and the summer.